Yo, I'm Shay Serrano.
And I'm Brandon Jinx Jenkins.
We have a new show called No Skips with Jinx and Shay. In it, we discuss the most unskippable albums in hip-hop history.
New episodes drop on Thursdays, only on Spotify.
It's the Bill Simmons Podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filtered by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. Download the app today. Bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Simply Safe. While you refresh your space and take care of your spring cleaning, now's a great time to look into Simply Safe Home Security. It's the only home security I use, and I can't recommend it enough, especially as we head toward the summer when people disappear, when they go on vacations, when they go do things, and you don't want to leave your house or your apartment on its own. You deserve some peace of mind. Get 20% off your system today when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplysafe.com/BS. There's no safe like Simply Safe. We're also brought to you by TheRinger.com as well as the Ringer Podcast Network, where we debuted a couple new podcasts recently. No Skips with Jinx and Shay and season two of Flying Coach, Peter Schrager, Sean McVay. You can check both of those out on the Ringer Podcast Network as well as the new Rewatchables coming Monday night. It's a movie that came out about 20 years ago. It is a movie that is directed by somebody who became an even bigger director after the movie. And that's all the hints I'm going to tell you. But it's coming out Monday night. Coming up, part one, me and Rosilla, we waited until after the Celtics-Nets game to break down the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. And then after Mavs clips later tonight, we're going to put up part two after we finish taping that one. So a little two-part extravaganza for you. It's all next. First, Pearl Jam. All right, Ryan Russell is here taping this at 6:30. We just watched Celtics-Nets. The Nets killed the Celtics. They looked like they were trying to score 150 points. They left their starters in until there was about a minute left in the game. They basically just took turns torching Tatum and the Tatumettes because he didn't really have any help out there. But Russell, this is only the 12th time we've seen this team with the three guys. Now, they're playing a team that is a 500 team that had no rim protection because Robert Williams wasn't playing. They didn't really have any shooting and couldn't really defend them at all. I don't want to say that this is what the rest of the playoffs is going to look like, but this is the hypothetical awesome version of what the Nets looked like. It was pretty impressive. It felt like they made every single shot they took.
Yeah, look, I think the only reason they lost game three is they're up 19-4, 3.5 minutes into the game. They're like, these guys suck. And then they just were like, oh. You know, and Tatum played one of the all-time games any Celtic has ever played in a playoff game. And Marcus was incredible in game three. And even though Kemba was, you know, just another bad shooting night from him, like there were all these guys making these big-time effort plays. The oddity of this series is that I think this is actually kind of the toughest we've seen the Celtics look. Like they've actually cared more. They've shown more fight. They showed a lot more fight in game four, but I'm going to stop myself because it's just not even close. I mean, there's no Robert Williams. We know Jalen's been out. Then no Kemba for this one. There were rotations in this game, Bill, where I think it was like Fournier, Langford, Semi, Grant Williams. I mean, Pritchard.
Wait a second. Don't forget about the iconic Semi, Grant, Jabari, three out of the five guys on the floor to start the second quarter. That was rough.
Right. So, you know, Brooklyn can do whatever they want when they want to in this matchup. And I think actually some of the most impressive stuff is that the second quarter start where Kyrie and Durant are out and Harden just goes solo. But he can just do, you know, you're getting Thompson switches on him. He toasts him every time. You get Fournier in a switch. He toasts him. There's no backline help. So I think the biggest mistake you can make if you're a Celtics fan or anybody like that going, well, if they had done this or played this guy or all these different things, like there's just not even close. Like Brooklyn probably should have swept this and they're going to win game five. This thing's, you know, they're not even close.
And they didn't sweep them because Tatum played the best game of his life. And I've seen, I think, pretty much every great Jason Tatum game. The one on Friday night was different. It was him putting all the pieces together, him realizing the inside out thing, drawing contact when he wanted, solving double teams, and just, it was 50 hard points. He scored 50 relatively easy points against the Wizards, right, in the playing game. He's going against Bertans and Rui Hachimura, and he played really well. The Friday night was different. They fell way behind. It looked like they were going to roll over. The Nets thought the sweep was happening. They were going to be out of there by the weekend. And Tatum kind of just didn't want to let it happen. I thought tonight, same thing. He played really well. He ended up with 40, 10 for 22, 17 for 17 from the free throw line. It felt like he could have had 30 free throws. But the takeaway for me, considering how young he was, but also who he was going against, was, you know, just comparing him and Durant. Because Durant was unbelievable tonight. He had he was 14 for 20, 11 for 11 free throws, and got any shot he wanted.
14 for 20.
I don't know if he hit the rim on any of his makes either, but, you know, watching those two go head to head as a Celtics fan who's trying to figure out what Tatum's ceiling is, it was one of the first times I was like, oh yeah, he's, I don't know if he's Durant 2.0, but you know, there's a chance he could be the best scoring forward in the league, other than maybe Luka, in 2-3 years. I thought the stuff he showed, I was really blown away, because his teammates weren't helping him. There was no other threats on the floor. Even when Kemba was out there Friday night, it's not like the Nets were like, oh shit, we can't leave Kemba. Marcus Smart, they just left wide open this whole series, basically. Fournier is who he is. He had no help whatsoever. He had 90 points in 2 games.
And just think, when you accept that Luka's a guard, Tatum will be even higher in your forward rankings.
I know. I changed my mind depending on how I have to do the All-NBA. I want to hit a couple big picture points, questions for you. First off, I think that might have been Marcus Smart's last Boston game.
Well, they're not eliminated yet.
I mean, the home game, I mean. I mean, that might have been it. I think the next time we see him, they're playing the video thanking him for his 7 great years in Boston as he's on whatever uniform he's wearing next year, because they're not going to bring this team next year. They're not trading Tatum and they're not trading Jaylen. And if you don't know what Jaylen means to the city and the organization, you saw it Friday night when Kyrie kind of did his little intimation thing and Jaylen just shut it down with this 4.5 minute basically monologue that was incredible. Those two guys aren't going anywhere. I think if there's a move to be made, unless there's a Kemba trade, which we can talk about in a second, but I think Marcus has real trade value. He looked like himself with crowds, but has been pretty uneven this season. Has a tradable contract. He's got 1 year left. And I think that was his last home game.
You're way more on this than I am. Like, you're definitive about it. Like, this is the second time you've brought it up this season. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know he's been offered because he really is the only tradable piece. I would think there's probably a difference of opinion amongst the team of what he means to them in the future. And look, for the Smart fans, the people that love him and love all the intensity, all the stuff that he brings, like, I understand, right? I'm not trying to like dump on him because I've had my frustrations with him, all right? Because he does care, and that's important. But I think it's always been a challenge with him kind of understanding how much better the other two guys are. And I don't, that's a hard thing. It's a hard thing for a young player, you know, and it's a hard thing for a guy who's thinking about the next contract and all that kind of stuff. So you're more definitive about than I'll always be like, well, I don't think they're just going to wake up and say, we have to get him out of here, because that seems harsh. I just think it's like, if you're retooling this thing, you don't have many options, because Kemba's basically untouchable at over $70 million the next 2 years.
I'm not saying definitively he's out. I'm just saying they're not going to bring back this team next season. And he is by far, if you're just being smart about it, and you're using experience and savvy and reading the tea leaves left and right here, he's the most logical guy to get traded. I think he has the most trade value, and I don't think they're trading Tatum and Jaylen. And I think Kemba's untradeable, which I want to get to in a second. Here's the thing with Marcus. I think he has more value to teams that haven't been watching him day in, day out, because I don't think he's the same defensive player anymore. You saw it tonight. Harden, Kyrie, and Durant. Now, granted, those are three incredible guys, but I feel like 2018 Marcus would have had a better chance to defend those guys. I don't think he's as athletic as he was 3 years ago. And, you know, I think there's been some wear and tear. I think he played really, really hard. And I don't want to turn this into a dump it on Marcus thing. I just think next year's a contract year. I think he's going to want to get paid. And I think they're going to look at this and go, all right, if our best three guys are Smart, Tatum, and Brown, where are we going? And, you know, odds are not anywhere.
Yeah, and I always kind of look at it as like every fan base, everybody can get really selfish about your own shortcomings. Okay. It's like, all right, what can we do? What can we do? Well, usually your options are pretty limited. And if they want to bring back Fournier on any kind of deal, then they may be having to move some pieces around, hoping to just have more depth where it's not some major move, but the depth is somehow cheaper, you know, to avoid what could be a huge tax bill to have all of these guys back. I mean, that's where the Fournier thing comes in. And it's also where the rest of the trade exception, where you're like, okay, but you know, I know everybody get really excited and reading these Beal articles because the trade exception lined up with his salary. And you're like, yeah, that's not the way it works. Like the person you're getting in the trade exception usually has to be somebody that people are ready to move on from. So the Kemba part of it at 36 million and then 37.6 million player option, which we can probably go ahead and report. He'll pick that one up 2 years from now.
I have this for you.
Right. Go ahead.
I have the worst active contracts right now.
Jim
this
McElwain.
Is what they have next year, year after. Kevin Love, 31.5, 28.9. Wall, 44.3, 47.4. God, I think that's the worst.
$47 million for John Wall.
Russ is 44.2, 44.2 straight. Kemba's 36 next year, 37.7 next year. Porzingis, 31.7, 33.8. And then the sneaky 36. He's got 3 years left. Wiggins is 31.6 and 33.6, and he's arguably the most productive if you're trying to win out of all these guys. Russell is 30 and 31.4. Horford's 27 and 26.5. And Hayward, I'm throwing on here just because he gets hurt every year, 29.9, 30.1, 31.5. My point is, if Kemba's getting traded, I think it's for one of those other guys on the list, and the Celtics aren't taking back John Wall. Kevin Love, maybe. I think the Cavs would have to trade Sexton to open up the Kemba thing. But then that, like, I don't understand why
would
they
do that?
Do that.
Especially if they want Garland to be the future. And then it's like, okay, so what are you going to do? Have Garland play off of Kemba? Which I know they've tried to do with Sexton, but you just hear more complaints out of the Sexton part of the combination than you do Garland. Right.
The Porzingis thing. Right.
Well, we're hearing those stories about the guys on opposing teams saying he's not going to pass it to you when Sexton has the ball.
The rare trash talking where they're actually undermining the style of play. Porzingis is the most logical, just on paper, like, oh yeah, problem for a problem, though, especially the way he played on Friday night. Now, right now, Clippers-Dallas is happening. He might have 35 points tonight. I'll sound like an idiot, but...
No, it hasn't been great. And I've defended Porzingis a lot, but I mean, it's not that great. And I think you would agree. Whenever I make the rounds of calls, you know, something I'll always ask, be like, hey, you hearing about anybody getting mad? Like, who's the next mad guy? You hearing any whispers or anything? Mm. And right now it's pretty quiet on that front. But as far as like, who do you think a big name? They're like, Porzingis is available.
Well,
which
you're taking, you're taking 3 years back with him. So maybe there's a Kemba Porzingis something, putting a shooter next to, I don't know. I actually think Kemba might be untradeable.
I don't know that I would trade for Porzingis anymore because I think it's kind of that group of guys that are too tall for their movement.
Yeah.
Like that are so big, they're always going to be hurt. I don't know. Yeah. That one's
so the,
icy.
The reason I bring this up is because I think people will be like, yeah, we should trade Kemba and we'll get it. And it's like, you're going to really not get anything back for a guy who two straight years has had knee issues and is a small guy who just has not looked good against good teams. Even before he got hurt in this series, he just didn't look good. We did remember that weird website I found where it was like your head to head matchup against.
Yeah,
the
we
guys.
Still don't know Kemba what it was based on.
Whatever that site was, Kemba was just getting destroyed. He was like Bazooka Joe in those matchups. So I just think the Celtics team's going to look differently. And I think with Smart's contract, he's the most logical guy. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm not reporting anything. Don't aggregate this. I just feel like that might have been his last home game.
I'm not confident to know that it's like, I wouldn't say anything like that. I just think you look at it this way. You go, you still have two great wings and a chance for one of them and Tatum to be a top 10 guy. And they're young enough that you're going to reset the deck. I know this is like frustrating and almost sounds like loser talk, but I just think it's reality talk. When you look at some of these teams that are coming up short, you know, for the Celtics, it's always weird because you go like, oh, you know, they couldn't get past the Eastern Conference Finals. And I'm like, man, you can make an argument all 3 of the years they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. They were kind of playing
above
their own ceiling.
There's something fluky about it.
Yeah, like it was almost, you know, hell, the first year with Isaiah Thomas at 50 wins, that's one of the worst one seeds ever. And they were probably trying to rebuild and reset things. And then it's like, man, the East is so bad and we're competitive. And that's when everybody wanted Brad Stevens to be the Massachusetts to be named after him. So I don't know.
I still feel that way.
Yeah, I just think you should feel good that you have those two guys, despite the fact how disappointing this is. But as far as like the Nets and the matchup and all this stuff, I mean, it's just they're worlds apart. They're worlds apart. We're talking about three Hall of Famers on one team that doesn't even need to play defense. And they can score whenever they want. And that's the only reason why I think they just took their foot off the gas when you're up 19-4 like that in game three, or this has been a sweep.
You know, I was thinking about this with the Clippers too. The Celtics, similar builds, right? Two awesome wings. Jaylen got hurt. But the league is so deep now from a top-heavy standpoint. I made my list of top 40 just in case we ran out of stuff to talk about. And I was kind of stunned by how good the 40 is. And I was stunned by, you know, what I thought like the top tier was and things like that. And it's just like, we're just in a talent boom right now. So if you have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum on your team, that might just be a round run loss unless you add other guys. Cause all of these teams now, we get to 16 playoff teams and 12 of them have a ton of talent. You know, Washington had Beal and Westbrook and really nobody else. And they're just getting demolished by Philly, like demolished. Those games weren't close, you know? And then Miami, who makes the finals last year, and it seemed like it was 7 years ago when you watched them this year. It was like, wow, they don't have enough talent. It was against a team they beat 9 months ago. So I just think we're pretty loaded these days.
Yeah, the depth is great. And for the listeners to get a little chuckle out of this, because I know we were going to do our top 30 a few months ago, and I did it, and I, you know, had it pretty good. I had like 33 guys maybe, and I was like, all right, I could be argued in and out of a couple of them here. As the game started today, Bill sends me a text. He's like, hey, I did my top 40 players in case you want to do that. And I'm like, dude. Like, I'm not going to. The game's already started. I know. And I appreciated it. And I want to hear it from you. But I'm like looking at my notepad as we're in the beginning of Atlanta, New York. And I'm like already taking down other stuff on Trey that I was looking at. And I look at the text and I just go, ugh. And then I think like, yeah, this is going to suck. I'm not going to be able to do it. And I go, you know what? Because I'm not. I'm just not going to be able to do the 40 the way I want to right now. I just need it. I'll do it later on.
We'll do it at some point.
You can do it or whatever. I couldn't pull it off on top of everything else and watching the games.
I have a couple of quick Nets things because we got to move on to some of these other series. First of all, the Boston crowd was awesome today. They're down 25 and they're acting like they were down 2. Like they were really into the game. I think they were excited to be back. In the first quarter, it kind of had a upset kind of feel to it. And then unfortunately, the benches had to play and all of a sudden the Nets were up 9. But you know, when we were growing up, and I remember most famously with Ralph Sampson at the game after he punched Siechting when he came in and the crowd was like a Roman Coliseum, and I did feel like it psyched him out. I've been to games where players got psyched out. In 2021, I don't feel like crowds getting on players and booing them works the way it used to back in the day. I think all it does for somebody like Kyrie is it makes him mad, it makes him try harder, and it puts a burr up his ass and he's actually more likely to play better if you're doing that. I'm not saying the fans shouldn't have done that, but when they were on him like that, I was like, oh shit, he's going to play really hard today. And he did. He was like doing tip-ins with 2 minutes left. They're up 20. If he played half as hard as that in the 2019 playoffs, maybe something good would happen for the Celtics.
He was awesome. And you're right. Like, I think there's something with him where, look, when you hit a shot like he did in 16, why is he going to be phased on a Sunday afternoon up 2-1 on the Celtics who aren't that good?
Right. So, against Peyton Pritchard and Semi Ojeleye. Yeah, like, right. Oh, man. So, oh, the fans are being mean. Yeah, but it's not like the fans shouldn't do that.
I have Langford in a switch. Although, you know, although Langford probably has a better chance than some of the other guys that get caught in switch.
Right. But yeah, just like, you know, the crowd's yelling at Durant. And it's like, Durant's the best scoring forward probably of all time. He's not going to be fazed by this. He's probably just going to hit a 3 his next time down. I guess my point is, I don't know what else fans should do. I almost wonder if we should use a little reverse psychology and you're just applauding the guys in the other team every time they do something. Oh, that was brilliant. Kyrie's brilliant. What an honor to be here. And you just kind of psych them out, or just silence would be the other thing that might work. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
You know what the answer isn't? Is chanting for Taco Fall with 4.5 minutes left in a playoff.
Yeah, that was
game.
Rough.
That's so embarrassing.
That was rough. Can I tell you something? And I mean this.
And it's nothing against Taco, by the way. I just think that you're a home crowd. You're the Celtics. And
yeah, it's
still,
a playoff game. It's not February.
Come on. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I think there was a lot of kids in the crowd today. Here's the thing. I would have rather have seen Taco in the...
I just dumped on thousands of kids.
Well, no. I would have rather have seen Taco in the second quarter than Semi Ojeleye and Grant Williams. I honestly, in all sincerity.
Semi, yes. Grant had some decent moments, but defensively...
If he's out there, at least the Nets aren't going to be able to drive to the basket. It was a layup line for them. At least if the 7'6" guy is in there, they're thinking for a split second.
Yeah, you know what they're thinking of doing? They're thinking of setting 5-1 screens, and then now Taco's 30 feet away,
great,
waving his arms all over the place.
Do that.
All
that's right. Fine. But how about play a zone with Taco?
I can tell you how that's going to look.
Play a zone. Anything.
So you do think there are adjustments to be made? Because I would, like, this would be local radio 101. Like, if I were doing the old call-in show back in the zone days, I'd be like, all right, you know, what can they do? I'd be like, we need more minutes from this guy. And you're like, there's no magic. There's nothing's happening here. This thing was over before it started.
You know what what should have happened is as it became a layup line, somebody should have creamed Harden or Kyrie or one of those guys, because it's the playoffs and they don't have that Morris brother on this team, right? They don't have like Markieff coming in.
Well, the first couple quarters with the Morris brothers, fourth quarter, I don't know. you know what? I can't believe there isn't somebody that when Harden just absolutely forearm shivers them off him, like Fournier ended up in the stanchion, he just gets chucked.
Yeah.
I can't believe there isn't a guy that's like, I stink. It doesn't even matter if I'm out here. And he just chucked me to the ground again. I mean, I agree that nobody wants to find. I can't believe nobody's really lost their minds after getting chucked to the ground by Harden. They just accept it. It's really weird.
Harden was awesome today.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is they can run all of that stuff with just him. Like the start of that second quarter when he's like, okay, I'm going to do my Houston Rockets deal against this Celtics team right now where the guys they had out there for the second quarter, that wasn't even fair. They should have just said like, hey, we're going to start the clock at 6 minutes and have you guys up 10 more.
It was when they get up 8, it feels like the game's over because it's like they're never going to screw up enough possessions for you to be able to go on like a 12-2 run. There's the odds of them scoring is basically 50% every time. The other thing, it reminds me of like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or something. And granted, like this is the best the Nets are going to look because next round they're going to play Milwaukee. Giannis is going to be out there. You have Brooke Lopez in the middle. You have Holiday being floating around. Like the Bucks are significantly better defensively than Boston is, significantly. Yeah. So this is the best Brooklyn's ever going to look. But the game today, it felt like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when they would have those things where it's like, all right, now Tom Petty's going to play with Prince and Eric Clapton. And then each guy kind of steps out. And it's like, oh, shit, that's Prince. He's doing a solo now. And then it's like, no, Eric Clapton's good. They can just go from guy to guy. And it's like three of the most talented offensive players of this era and two of the most iconic offensive players of their generation. So when you see it all together, you're like, fuck, this is tough. Yikes.
You're like Joe Harris's Kid Rock and like Clapton doesn't want to stand near him. I'm just trying to think of other guys here.
I got to say one thing with the Nets, and I think this bodes well for them next round. I still think the Bucks are going to beat them, but their role guys are all frisky. Right.
Yeah. Like, Brown. I mean, Blake's just out there now, like captain role guy. I mean, he's trying to get charges every single possession.
Super fit Claxton, super physical.
And Claxton's incredible in that he has accepted who he is on this team so much more. Like at Georgia, I was like, all right, you're huge, but what's with this point guard, two guard stuff?
Yeah. And then Tyler Johnson, he'll pick you up full court and annoy the shit out of you and try to poke check and stuff like that. They have like five guys like that. So from an energy standpoint, I actually think that bodes well for them for the playoffs. The interesting thing about this series was DeAndre didn't play. They're going to need him at some point, and that will open the door for teams to either do hack at DeAndre, try to get him in switches, things like that. They didn't have to play him this series, but at some point they will.
And that'll be the Lopez like deal, because will they trust? Because this thing is, even if you bring in DeAndre, you go, okay, does it make sense to have DeAndre that far away? from the hoop with Lopez, but
well, yeah, let's talk about the Bucks. We'll okay. take a break and we'll come back and talk about them. This episode is supported by State Farm. If you've ever been in an accident and you're okay, but you know what happened, your first reaction is going to be, man, why did that happen? If you ever buy a new house or a new car or a new anything, there's this little rush you get when you're like, I did it. I made it happen. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. All right, so we were talking about the Bucks right before we went into that break. The Bucks looked awesome against the Heat, and they didn't even play that well, which was the frightening thing if I'm a Nets fan or a Sixers fan. It's like, it's not like the Bucks shot the lights out. It's not like Giannis was incredible. It was just those three guys together have become really good. And it's going to be a big three versus big three series next round. Just what they did against the Heat. How much of that would you attribute to revenge plus the Bucks are just a really good defensive team versus maybe that Heat thing was just fluky last year? What would you, if you had to seesaw that?
I don't think revenge was the main factor. I looked at an awful Heat offense. And I mean, if you go over the numbers, and again, we're only talking about four games in the same matchup, and these can be misleading. You know, I remember last year we were looking at Houston's small approach and that OKC series where it was a seven gamer, yeah. where you looked at Houston's defensive numbers after that, and you're like, hey, look how great their defensive numbers are. And you're like, yeah, it was kind of Chris Paul and then a timid Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Lou Dort's taking threes. Schroeder had his moments. So it wasn't like this really tough offense that you had to slow down. But if you just go based on what Miami did offensively or what Milwaukee did defensively to them, Miami was at like 95 points per 100 possessions in this series. That's almost 10 points worse than the next worst offensive team so far in the playoffs, four games in, the Knicks. So when I was going through and doing my own prep for each series, you know, the emotional side of you was, what if, you know, what if they're in their head a little bit? And every time I kept coming around to like another fact about who Miami really was, I was like, why would anybody pick them? No one, like, and the only reason anybody was picking them, which I understood, was it like an emotional hangover from the previous matchup. So, I mean, Giannis shot it awful and he kept shooting. Rebounding was great. Defense is there. They played Bam perfectly, where Bam didn't really ever figure it out. Butler was terrible. You know, so this, that series, I think game one was like, well, you know, if something goes here, something goes there, you know, you never know what could happen. And then it's like, no, actually, like, this is a problem. Miami has a real offensive problem. And I think it had way more to do with the matchup than it was just revenge mode.
We nailed it a week ago when we said that felt like a weird game one must win for Milwaukee, that once they got over the hump of that game, it was going to be smooth sailing. I didn't think they would sweep, but they just dominated them. And my buddy Hench, diehard crazy Boston fan, he mailed me this graphic of the Heat's field goal percentages last year, their best four guys versus this year. And like each guy was 10 to 15% lower than a year ago. And he's like, these fucking guys, they got hot for six games. We should have been in the finals.
I couldn't defend Bam. Like it was a bad matchup for Boston with the Bam thing.
Like, well, I can't get over the hero game. I can't get over. That one game when he had like 38 or 40, he just said, and then Iguodala hitting five threes in the final game wasn't awesome either. But yeah, I think if you look at that 2020 Heat team now, they become this weird aberration team. They go into this room with like the 2007 Cavs and some of these other weird finals teams we have where we're going to look back 20 years from now and be like, the fuck happened that? Oh, that was the bubble year. It'll be like one of those. But the Butler legacy, we were talking on this podcast about Butler as like, is he have to be considered a top shelf guy? He's going against LeBron and AD and he's single-handedly winning two finals games. And, you know, he was the dominant player in the Eastern Conference. And what does this mean for him? And now it's like he was awful. And talk to big game too.
Yeah, and look, this isn't about shitting on Jimmy Butler. This is just responding to everything that Jimmy Butler's been about. Because when guys win, and it makes sense, I mean, this isn't, But when they had that run last year, then it became this kind of like forced storyline that he was always one of these real guys and he was proving it, that he was always like a tier one guy that could carry a team. When in reality, like he's flirted with being a top 10 guy, I think like one season for the rest of his career. I mean, I'm talking about like the real years of production. Yeah. I've never really seen him as that. Everybody would want Jimmy Butler. All right, I'll take Jimmy Butler. You'd love to have Jimmy Butler. But it's like, well, he's in the finals. So now what do we do? You know, is this guy a top five? Is he a top six guy? And then, of course, they go into the playoffs. He's like, don't worry about it. Like, I've got something up my sleeve. I've got all this shit. And it's like, no, you got swept and you shot it like crap. So, yeah. You know, and he's Miami. So, you know, we're going to forget that any of that even happened in like 3 days. You know, it's not going to be some, he's not a big enough of a star for him to actually have to pay like some of the criticism price that other guys would have to pay for saying all the stuff that he's been saying about him and his team and his game for months, when reality was like, they were a decent team. And they came out of the East. Nobody else did. Good for them. But I don't know. I think we end up making more mistakes about who players are in those winning moments than we do when we kind of step back and look at the bigger picture and realize like Butler's really good. Everybody liked Jimmy Butler. He's not a top 10 player in the league. Top 10's crowded anyway.
I did second team all NBA for him this year, but there were major multiple injuries that pushed him.
He was
him
great
up.
This year.
And he had
great.
A really good second half of the season. Yeah, I won't read you my top 40, but if we're just starting with these 11 guys, and that this is in no particular order: LeBron, KD, Giannis, Luka, Jokic, Embiid, Curry, Kawhi, Dame, Davis, and Harden. Butler's not in that group.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point, because it's like, all right, you voted him second team all NBA, so that means he's 10 best. It has to do with missing games. Like, if you redrafted the entire league for one season, Butler would not be one of the first 10 picks. And that's okay.
And then if you go next five, Tatum, Holiday, Young, Williamson, Mitchell, and then Paul and Gobert. Now I have 17 guys I just listed.
You have Holiday that high?
I'm just listing guys.
Okay, all right.
I actually do have Holiday in top 20 now.
All right, but that the you, more you just brought him up, it felt like 13, so you're not saying that's in order.
No, right? No, I was going out of order because I didn't want to make people think I was reading off a list. But I do think Holiday was a top 20 guy for me. The stuff he's doing defensively, like, you know, in Boston, it was like, Marcus is so incredible on defense. Like, Drew Holiday is incredible on defense, and I hate myself for not voting for him for first team all defense last year. He should just be penciled in. As long as he's on this level, he's the best defensive guard in the league, and that's it. It's done.
Yeah, for the guys that out there think they have one of those lockdown guys, you should just watch Drew for entire, especially closing quarters.
He's incredible.
Watch him and then go, oh, my guy doesn't look like that.
So the Heat, quickly, because I want to get to the Bucks. So this Butler thing, they're going to make a big thing about, we got to get a second star. They actually do have cap space.
Yeah, like $20 million if they renounce a bunch of guys.
Yeah, and then the old Depot thing, I don't know what they do with that, whether they had an under-the-table deal with him or not. I do think old Depot would have helped them not get swept against the Heat, but against the Bucks, but I don't think he would have made a difference. Dragic sounds like he's probably done.
He's done at that number. Like, the cap holds they have on Nunn and Duncan are really low.
Yeah.
So there's some stuff that they could do there, but, you know, maybe they do a 1 year for Oladipo. But that's when you go, okay, is it 1 year and you guys came to some... I mean, it just... Like, if Oladipo can never get back, it's just scary that it's like now 2 years. It's not like he's that old.
It's like two and a half
years of this. Yeah. Or, you know, do you, if you're Miami, because we always have to prepare ourselves for this. Is there some name we're not even thinking about that's really mad in July and all of a sudden Miami's in play?
Well, Clippers 19, Dallas 16 right now in the first quarter, but Kawhi would be... You know, the most fascinating, and we'll talk about this in part two because we'll have known what happened, but the most fascinating what-if name in this free agency is going to be Kawhi. Clips got bounced in round one, he's going to be in the Miami Knicks. He'll be in that whole vortex.
Right.
Lowry would be the other one.
Yeah, well, that's a completely different level. And, you know, Miami doesn't have any assets for picks. And that's why...
No, but they do have Hero. Stuff. If they wanted to, you know... Basically upgrade from Hero if they felt like Hero is who he is. He's like this awesome heat check guy, but could he be a top three guy on a title team? Probably not. So we'll see. They're going to be an interesting team to watch over free agency. And they talk a big game. They're always in the middle of it. I love Justin Termini's tweets about this. All right, we got to get Justin Termini out. I love that guy. One of my favorite Twitter accounts. But he had a great Jimmy Butler tweet. I think it was something like, has anyone ever talked more and delivered less than Jimmy Butler? And I was like, it's not bad. I mean, other than the finals thing, it was a lot of losses. Jimmy does talk a lot. The media certainly likes him. But yeah, we got to get him on. Do you think, would you consider Middleton, Holiday, and Giannis a official big three?
You know, Middleton.
What are your big three standards? What do you look at when you get the resume sent to your house?
I'm a little more difficult about it. Like, I remember looking up a big three thing, and NBA.com ranked, I think, the top 60 big threes ever. And I think there was one with Paul Millsap and Joe Johnson. So above whatever above that is, that's my standard. That's my cutoff. Once you go there, I might have to send you this article. It was one of the funniest things ever. And I think it may have even been a slideshow. And I'm just going through it going, you know, at this point, you should have just stopped the exercise at like your 35th best big three.
I feel like there's been probably 9 or 10 total big threes, like legitimate big threes in our lifetime.
Well, okay. Is Chicago a big three team in the 90s?
No.
Does Rodman count as a big three?
No. No.
All right.
No, he doesn't.
What about, I mean, Shaq, Kobe.
Not Rodman at that point in his career. You could argue that the first Rodman season with the Bulls, maybe, because he was still Rodman. But the last two, no way.
I know our standard is going to be way beyond it. Like, basically, it turned into, like, if anybody got a third guy, then they'd put him in some team logo, and they were like, oh, that's their big three. When in reality, it isn't. It isn't that many. It's the Lakers had Celtics.
The Lakers had Wilt, Baylor, and West at the same time when Baylor still could jump. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
The Celtics had Sam Jones and Havlicek and Bill Russell. Pretty good.
Those are
like top 40 all-time Hall of Famers. Like, that's kind of where I like my big three to land. It really started with the Celtics with Parrish, Bird, and McHale. That was the first time people started saying big three, big three.
Yeah, that's the first time people said it. I mean, because that poster with those three guys was like the first time, even though, you know, it was fairly dismissive of the fact that Worthy, Magic, and Kareem were on the other side.
Legitimate big three?
Beal, Rui Hachimura.
Beal, Bertans, Westbrook. There's been some good force big threes. Like, Houston had that.
Yes.
Kind of semi-washed up Barkley with semi-washed up Drexler and Hakeem. They're like, big three. And it's like, Drexler can barely move at this point in his career. And then they kind of flip Pippen in there. And that didn't work either.
Barkley's rebounding rate was still terrific, though. So I won't hear it.
He was great. I didn't like skinny older Barkley as much. It was like when you have that friend who is the husky guy in college who was awesome. And then he's like, hey, I went vegan. And you see him and he weighs like 158 pounds. And you're like, where's my friend?
Yeah.
Who are you? I don't like when that happens.
I had a buddy that had like a weird blood test cholesterol scare. Now, granted, he drank and smoked and always ate fried food all the time.
Yeah.
But he was a big guy. And he was from Europe anyway. So I don't even think smoking's bad for you when you're from like Russia. But he he decided, like, he got freaked out. And then he went like crazy. You know, he was eating cucumber slices and strawberries and like just went complete. And I showed up and he answered the door with his shirt off. And I go, I think I'd rather you have high cholesterol.
Yeah,
it happens sometimes. Yeah.
Speaking of Milwaukee really quick, the Bogdanovich thing is such a funny what if for this playoffs, where who knows if they ever had him or if they leaked that they thought they had him.
I think they definitely had him, because the first time I found out anything about it is another team texted me and said, hey, our like numbers guy said that this doesn't even work. Like, they actually can't do the stuff that's been announced. So it wasn't like a hey. Because I know that it turned into supposedly teams were telling on them. And the tampering part is all gray area. So I think the league would have allowed it. But I was researching this again today, because on both ends,
Bogdanovich, I actually researched it too.
Bogdanovich added to this Bucks group is pretty scary. And it still gets back to Sacramento, where you go, how do you not just match? How do you just let this asset walk?
It's horrible.
Because he's completely changed who Atlanta's been, which I know we'll get to later when we get to that series.
Yeah, so I did the research too. And we've never gotten a full here's what happened story.
It depends on who you read.
And who you talk to, honestly.
Right.
What I heard is that they thought they had a deal. At some point, his agents were either involved, not involved. I've heard two different sides of that. But for that deal to work, as you said, his salary had to be a certain number. It wasn't as high as what Atlanta was going to pay him. Milwaukee was like, it has to be this. I don't know what it started at 14 or 13, whatever it started at. But Atlanta really wanted to sign him. And Atlanta's like, hey, man, we'll go to 18. So his agents were like, well, fuck that. We're not going to take 14. So he could be like the fourth dude in Milwaukee. We went to 18. And that was it. That's how it died. But I really do think Milwaukee thought they had him. And if they had him, especially Dante goes down, they still have Connaughton. They still have Forbes. They have some PJ Tucker chicanery they can do. I guess they could play Jeff Teague if they really wanted to. I never thought Dante was that good. It's just another body and it's six fouls, stuff like that. But Bogdanovich is a whole other animal. And if they had him, I honestly would think this is a layup for them to at least go toe-to-toe and beat Brooklyn. I think they would beat Brooklyn with Bogdanovich. I still think they're going to beat Brooklyn, but I don't feel as confident because that the series might just come down to that guy in the corner who's like Forbes with 3 minutes left. And it's like, fuck, that guy's got to make a shot. We have these big threes going against each other. It's like, or it's like Brooke Lopez, you know, it's going to come down to some weird guy in that team. And that's when we'll think about Bogdanovich.
Yeah. Look, Tucker, his analytics, like you're not going to like him. When he wanted out of Houston, you know, he handled it differently. He was quiet about it, but people knew he wanted out, which made sense. He had, and again, this is depending on what you, he had the single like worst plus minus of like 450 NBA players.
Yeah.
And yet when you bring him in, you know, okay, we know there are certain times if we want to go small, we can trust him to be out there and you know, maybe he gets cooked in some of these switches, but I think there's an effort, there's a pridefulness with him. We're like, hey, I'll take a PJ Tucker in my rotation. You never know. Because Milwaukee's probably going to try to figure out like what they want to do with the Brooke Lopez lineup versus going five out and having Giannis initiated. The funny thing about Giannis, I mean, he still shot it 20 times a game. He shot 6% from three against Miami. He shot 6% and he kept taking them.
What's that? One for 15? Two for 30? 6% is really bad.
It's not good, Bill.
One thing I like about Tucker is I do feel like he'll fuck with Durant. They've known each other forever. I think he will. I think he'll go with those guys. And honestly, it seems like the book's out with Durant. I don't know if you've noticed this. You watch a lot of basketball. You're home some nights watching hoops.
Few.
The Durant online Durant has now morphed into on-court Durant where people chirp at him the same way they would chirp at him on their replies because they think they can get to him. And his head's on a swivel. Like, he's yelling at people courtside. He was next to the Celtics bench like three or four different times today, like talking with those guys. Three different Celtics made a run at him in this game. I feel like the word is out. Like, just start shit with Durant because he's got rabbit ears, basically. And it's like he is online. And I feel like don't aggregate this. This is just what I'm seeing watching television. I do feel like teams feel like they can annoy him.
I noticed it too. But what I saw was a positive for Durant. Like, when Grant Williams is talking shit to you and you're Kevin Durant, like, how far is that conversation going to go?
You're just going to hit a three in his face.
Right. Like, Durant's looking at him going, cool, man. You know, you're Grant Williams. Like, what are you going to do? You know, like, I didn't walk by Berman at ESPN being like, you know, highlights are a little shaky week 12, buddy.
But he is the only great player that just randos seem to go at. Like that, like Grant Williams isn't talking shit to LeBron.
No, but you know what? Like, this is always one of those things that I think is funny because we've both, you know, seen it. And I don't want to turn this into a huge segment, part of what we're doing, but like, whatever I think the tier above me is, I'd be like, why do you respond to any of this stuff? I don't really respond to much of it because it is a colossal waste of time. Like, if you try to imagine the person that's arguing with you about something, I'd be like, whatever, I'm not going to do this. Maybe like once every few months I'll say something. But then I'll think like somebody above me, like, why would you do it? You know? And then when you realize like the most, like the highest level of politicians in this country can't handle being criticized, that it's just, for some people, their exercise of getting through it is responding to all of it. So the idea that once you're at this level of success, that it's just you don't have it. Like, all of us are different. And for Durant, like, he'll always be this way. But I saw a guy that people were chirping with where he wasn't affected by it at all today. Like, I thought he was kind of looking around being like, how dare you even challenge me, as he hits another jumper in everybody's face.
Well, if I'm Milwaukee, I'm definitely doing the PJ Tucker. Giannis doesn't talk really any shit. He's like the most benevolent superstar we've had in a while.
Well, what about Middleton or Drew? All three of them, really?
Yeah, pretty quiet.
They're all kind of, I mean, Brooke will crush a guy and apologize. So it'll nice be kind of, yeah, it'll be kind of weird how that plays out. It's probably why a guy like PJ Tucker, but like, we need somebody in here that's got a little more attitude.
If gun to your head right now, Brooklyn versus Milwaukee, who are you taking?
I think all my Brooklyn content sucks. So I just don't, you know, I picked Philly because there are some things I really liked about Philly. It has nothing to do with this Wizards series. I'm not like watching this series going, man, I love my Philly pick. They're handling the Wizards. The Nets are horrifying, man. They're horrifying. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, you're picking Milwaukee for the same reason why I picked Philadelphia, I imagine, right?
I really think Milwaukee's good.
I do too. I can't wait.
I think there were some moments in this Boston series. Boston's completely undermanned. And I was texting about this before game four where I was like, I'm going to be really interested to see how Brooklyn responds tonight because they just haven't had enough reps together with adversity. Now, it looked great tonight, but they're playing a team that was trotting out below average NBA players for half of their roster, right? The only way the Celtics were winning tonight is if Fournier had like 35. Or Marcus Smart was like 11 for 13 from three. Like there had to be some variable that was basically Pritchard scored 28, a career high. Like there had to be some variable for them to match points.
Then I think the Nets would have scored 160 today.
Yeah, maybe they would have. Maybe they would have. But I still want to see them with real adversity because it is weird. It goes against everything that I like about basketball and think works in basketball when it's just like your turn, my turn. And that's just your offense. I've never seen it work for four rounds before.
No, but the Joe Harris part of it is incredible. Like to think that if you try to help, like the only time I thought there was some kind of adjustment, it's like if Harden's in there, and this would be something for Milwaukee, if they run the Harden minutes at the start of the second quarter and you're not throwing a hard double when Harden's out there without Durant and Kyrie, I think that's a mistake. I think those are the minutes where you kind of look at them in the Houston minutes against the Lakers last year where Westbrook was kind of shot physically. And then you go, all right, let's just sell out against him off this high screen stuff, you know, and then they kind of stopped screening and Houston was trying to do a couple different things. But that would be something I would look for from Milwaukee, that when it's the Harden solo mission, you might just want to sell out to try to screw him up. And then you never know. It still might not work, but it's worth trying because I think teams are really hesitant to do that. And as I mentioned, I think with you last week, like we saw the lesson in trying to double people, how bad it can go, whether it was Doncic. You know, the Knicks didn't really want to try to do it that much with Trey, and then Trey, they did it to him a couple times today, and then Trey burned him again. But with Harden in that situation, I'd like to at least see somebody try it.
I would let Kyrie get what he wants and try to take out the other two guys. Just like if Kyrie's taking 30 shots tonight, that's probably actually good because Kyrie, everyone's staying around watching him. Harden can get everybody else involved, and KD is amazing, and I don't even know what you do with him. And I think KD is in the running if you were saying who's the best player in the world right now. It's hard for me to think it's... He has to be in the first couple names mentioned, and he might be number one.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason we haven't, because it's been such an inconsistent season of him playing, but when he's played, he's even beyond what he normally
does. It's
fucking
awesome. So, I mean, he could be a stretch five.
Right.
He could be...
His defense looks like it's picked up, too.
His defense is great.
You know, and even though the Tatum... Got him a couple times. Like the fact that Durant is his size and he's staying in front of Tatum, who's throwing everything at him. You know, it's just one of those battles of two really talented guys. So I don't feel like Tatum, you know, walks away going like, oh, I got you. Yeah, you got him a couple times. But I mean, Durant's trying to hold up on top of everything else.
The baskets were so difficult that Tatum was scoring. It wasn't like he was.
No.
That was what was scary about the Nets today. They had 141 points. I loved like basically every shot they took. It felt like they could have had 170 if they had gotten some threes and some layups to go in. Everything they took was a good shot. I was impressed. All right, we're going to take a break, and we got to talk Sixers, Wiz quickly, but then Knicks, Hawks, because that's been a really, really meaty one. This episode is supported by State Farm. If you've ever been in an accident and you're okay, but you know what happened, your first reaction is going to be, man, why did that happen? If you ever buy a new house or a new car or a new anything, there's this little rush you get when you're like, I did it. I made it happen. But really, the only words you need to remember are like a good neighbor.
State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. This episode is brought to you by SimpliSafe. Whenever someone mentions spring, you can't help but think of the word fresh. Spring brings fresh air, fresh beginnings, freshly cleaned homes. It's also a really great time to take a fresh look at SimpliSafe home security. I use it in my home and absolutely love it. By the way, summer's coming. No better time to maybe dip in to our friends at SimpliSafe than when you're leaving your house, your condo, your apartment, wherever you live. You're probably going to go somewhere for a while. Maybe it's a week. Maybe it's 2 weeks. Guess who's going to know that? Burglars. SimpliSafe, great, because it protects your whole home. Uses advanced sensors and a variety of indoor and outdoor cameras. Keep watch over your property day and night. 24/7 professional monitoring for less than $1 a day. You can even check it out on your phone. Gives you peace of mind. You want peace of mind. Try SimpliSafe today. Risk-free. No contract. 60-day money-back guarantee. Get 20% off your system when you sign up for Fast Protect Monitoring at simplisafe.com/BS. That's simplisafe.com with two I's, simplisafe.com/BS. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
Okay, quickly, Sixers whiz. I'm gonna give each of us 30 seconds. Here's my 30-second Sixers whiz take, because this series is terrible. Westbrook's last four playoffs, he's 22-9-8, 39.6 field goal percentage, 30.8 three-point field goal percentage. 6-16 win loss record. His last 30 playoff games is 7-23. That's all I got.
The only negative I have on the Wizards, they're totally outmatched here. I don't know that you're learning a lot about this. And honestly, congrats to the Wizards for even getting to here based on where it was. What I don't love is, hey, we get it, Westbrook and Beal. You guys are out, man. The rest of your teammates aren't that good. Those two guys love eye rolling and letting everybody know the rest of the team sucks. And I think it's really lame as teammates to do that to a bunch of guys. And the rest of the guys are so unproven that they're never going to say anything. And I think they all kind of get along in a way. But it's just, I know you're frustrated out there, but Beal and Westbrook make the same mistakes that they go nuclear when their teammates make the same defensive rotation mistakes. On the other side of it, the Embiid step through facing up Gafford, the free throw line in game three. I can't believe a human being like Embiid can move that way. I know this is not breaking news with him. And Simmons is just so big against the guards that it doesn't really matter. He's, by the way, he's missed all of his free throws. Simmons is 0-9 on free throw attempts. We're not going to learn anything from this other than there are some really cool things with Philadelphia's offense where, you know, they decided to double Embiid at one point. Then they kicked it to Curry. Then they try to play him straight up. And they just swung the ball around. George Hill's in the other corner. So you're seeing Doc kind of experiment with the defense versus spacing closing lineups, which I think are going to be probably games where we're going to see different groups of guys. I really think we could see different groups of guys from the Sixers out there as Doc kind of figures out exactly the best closing group for each game.
Well, if they play the Hawks in this natural lead into Knicks Hawks, this was the by the way, kudos to Trae Young. He's been awesome. And this is the Trae Young I think you and I both wanted to see. But it was also, this is the perfect matchup for him, this team. When we get to the next round with the Sixers, assuming the Hawks make it, they're going to have Embiid as a rim protector. I assume they would throw Simmons and Tybal at him. Just like basically those two guys on Trae the whole time. And they're going to try to cut the head off of the Hawks by just taking out Trae. It's the opposite of how the Knicks have done it. And I have a lot of Knicks fans in my life. All of them think Tibbs has done an incredible job this year. He's coached a really strange series. Like, to me, I'm going into this Hawks series if I'm the Knicks. Like, forget about how bad Randall's been for a second. I have to take out Trae Young or at least make him work on defense. Like, just, I can't let him do nothing on defense. And then on offense, I can't let him do whatever he wants. Those two things together, I'm losing the series. And I think it's really strange that A, whoever Trae's guarding, I'm just, let's go to that guy. Let's put more guards on the floor so he's got to guard somebody. Him just hanging out on, you know, standing next to Reggie Bullock, that's great for the Hawks. And then on the other end, they just don't have the rim protection to stop him. I just think it's going to be night and day for him going against Philly. Philly has the perfect guys to guard him. They're taller, they're bigger, they're great defenders. Plus rim protection, it's going to be completely different than what he has now.
I can't believe they are so helpful to Trae Young's defensive problems. Like they run.
It's like they don't have any pass.
I don't get it. Like you can sit there and say, well, Reggie Bullock can't. Well, you can't try to get him in a switch. You can't at least try something. Because guess what? Nothing else is working. I mean, Randall's been a mess. He was better in game four. RJ Barrett's been a mess. He was better in game four. Derrick Rose, and I think all of us love that Derrick Rose has this part of his career because it looked like we may never even see this again. But he doesn't really get a lot of guys involved. And I wouldn't call Rose like an all-time creator either as far as getting other people going. It's on him, and that part of the offense has been terrific. But, you know, it's like, okay, well, you bring in Quickley to defend. Quickley can't hit a shot to save his life. I don't know that anybody really screamed shooter when Quickley was out there. They tried Neil Aquina for a couple possessions. That's not going to happen. They have a really – it's an awful setup for the Knicks. So that part I don't get. Like, I know – because I mentioned it, and then Hollinger said something about my tweet where he was like, hey, and then – there were a few people jumping in on it, but I mean, for the most part, they don't, never mind trying to attack him. They run everything away from him. So he doesn't even have to like make any decisions. He's just with Bullock off the ball almost 90% of the possessions. I don't understand that, but it would help if your best two players actually played better. On the defensive side, I don't think there's, this is where I think the first thing's approachable. Defending Trae in this series just isn't. It just isn't.
It's not happening. It's, you could see it in the first game.
He's too smart against the double, too. And he burned him on a couple of them here. Granted, if you want to try it, mix it up, try to make him feel uncomfortable, that's fine. But when they play him straight up, you know, they got him a couple times with a hard double in the game they lost when DeAndre Hunter missed a couple threes. You know, he had two back-to-back wide-open threes. He hits that. This thing might be a sweep. But you're right. Like, that's the part of Philly where it's like they can throw some real size at Trae. But Trae is so damn good at still getting space. And then the floaters. Like, if you can do this jaw, you know, really Trae floater thing, it's a whole nother level of your offense.
On against Philly, I would assume, like, if Tybal's out there, they can just hide him on Tybal because he's not an offensive player by any means. I don't know if you could hide him on Simmons because I think Simmons would then, I think they would then post him up and that might actually get Simmons going. So then you can't put him on Seth Curry because they'll actually run action for Seth Curry.
And Seth,
I think he's
going to
have a lot of problems that series. And then you could also attack him with Seth Curry, who's kind of a sneaky good offensive player if he's got a shitty defender on him. You know, it's just all stuff the Knicks could have done. If I were the Knicks, I would not have started Derrick Rose. I actually thought that was a big mistake. And it's the kind of thing you do when you're desperate for game two because you're going to lose the game if you don't win the half. But I think one of the best things about the Knicks this year was this bench would come in and it would almost be like a different team, you know, and they would be one team, then the bench would come in and they would get momentum and all this stuff. I would have started Quickley. They're not winning this series unless Quickley gave them something. So to kind of yank him around, I don't think was the move. I would have started him. I would try to get him minutes because I actually do think he can guard Trae. I don't think he's going to shut him down, but he'll at least stay in front of him. And he's their only chance out of all the guards they have. The other one, obviously, is Frankie Nicotine, who is unplayable.
Really, what this is it's figuring out what we saw this regular season. Now, there's a few storylines I was texting you earlier. For whatever reason, you're never allowed to mention that when Nate McMillan took over, that Bogdanovich came back at the exact same time. So
You're going to be, you know.
They clearly wanted Pierce out to not even give him a chance with Bogdanovich coming back because they wanted to fire him before he could come back. And there was that piece in The Athletic that felt like it was written by Trae Young where they just trashed him. And look, I'm not saying anything against reporters, a bunch of reporters that I read all the time, but it was very clear, like, all right, we don't like Lloyd Pierce. We're, you know, get him out of here. So that's already a problem. But they made sure once Bogdanovich was coming back that there was going to be a new coach. So there couldn't be any like false hope here. I looked at some of the Trae stuff because I was like, you know what I love about this now is that he trusts guys. I don't think Trae trusted his teammates when he first got started. And I would say that creeped into last year a little bit too. But I started doing some of the, like, the usage rates and where he's been. Because we're talking about somebody in the league who dribbles it as much as anybody, has the ball in his hands the most, is like a top seven guy in touches, dribbles per possession, number two overall in the NBA. And so I went through, like, some of the usage stuff in the regular season this year to the playoffs, wondering if it dipped. It's actually gone up. So that's, I know I didn't shoot it great in game four, but it's not like he's completely adjusted his approach. He's been just brutal. I mean, in a positive way, but there's just nothing the Knicks seem to be able to do with the guy. And I think to finish the thought here, is I don't know that this is a huge surprise. This Knicks story is awesome, Bill. The effort, Tibbs, Randall's resurgence, you know, Barrett taken to another level. But when I would watch him in the regular season, I'd be like, what are they doing? What's so good? And they just busted their ass with a team that's not even close to as talented as Atlanta's. And I think that you, when you're really predictable, a lot of like Randall ISOs far away and you want to load up on his drive side, I think it's easier to kind of slow these guys down. And that's exactly what we've seen through four games. So I'm not surprised by any of this, even though I know Randall killed them in the regular season. But Atlanta was missing some players in those games as well.
I'm such a coward. I thought the Hawks were going to kill them and then just backed off. And because it seemed like Randall really owned them. But you're right. If you look closer at the three games when he destroyed them, it wasn't the same Hawks team that is now. The thing that would concern me, because I know there are Knicks fans out there like, we're going to win game five. Crowd's going to win that for us. We're going to go down in game six. Randall's going to show up and then we'll have game seven in MSG. It's like, all right. Here's the problem. Like, if the Hawks didn't fall asleep for like 10 minutes in game two, this series would already be over. The Hawks have dominated and they don't have any answer for Trey.
I would ask anyone this, and I already know what your answer is going to be. We've seen plenty of weird stuff happen. I mean, rarely have we had a team up 3-1 where we're sitting there talking about the team that's down going, I love all these. Does anyone think the Knicks are better than Atlanta? Who's answering question?
The Hawks are definitely way more talented. But listen, game seven's in New York. I can't count it out. I wouldn't bet my life that the Hawks are winning the series, but I would certainly feel very, very strongly that this is probably over. And look, I don't think we sold the Trae Young thing hard enough. And I think it's interesting to compare this to Ja, because we were talking about Ja, who I think is really talented, who had, 47 in game two against Utah and has been incredibly explosive. But I think we both see it the same way with him. He still doesn't totally have that savvy with how to control pace yet. He doesn't totally get it. He hasn't had enough reps for how to have a feel for like, oh, this is when I should take over. I got to get this guy involved. I have a chance to put them away. I'm going to do this. I'm going to slow things up. I'm going to speed it up. He's not there yet. He's going to be there. I'm a full believer. He's probably a year away. I think what struck me with Trey, the last 2 months of Trey versus what we saw the rest of his career, there has been an evolution and a maturation. You can see it. He's evolved with how he controls the game. He doesn't do dumb shit anymore. Like, he'll still take a 30-footer once a half, but...
Well, he took a few of them today, but yeah.
But all his decisions make sense though, right? When you're watching, you're like, oh, this is why we were complaining, because we knew he had this in him and now he seems to get it.
You remember that Harden Capella stuff they used to do? You're just like, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
Like if I jab Steph Harden defensively and even try to retreat to contest Capella, it's probably not going to work. Like Harden reads it, but Trey's smaller and he reads it perfectly. And I just like that Atlanta has a bunch of different options. I'm not going to pick them against Philadelphia if they make it against them, but I see somebody that trusts people a little bit more. And that was always my biggest issue with Trey, is I just didn't feel like he'd be like, I'd rather me take an awful shot and never pass it to anybody else. I mean, I know what the assist numbers and all that stuff, but the Bogdanović completely changes who they are, because I think it's another guy that can not only catch and shoot, but can handle a little bit. And it completely changed. Like, think how different, well, I don't know. Maybe Brooklyn still comes out and none of this really matters with the Bogdanović storyline, which we already covered. But even Gallinari, who at times, Bill, I'll be like, does he ever move? Like, he always looks like as he's moving, it's like, okay, this is right. And this is where he blew out his ACL. Like, every time he starts getting going, like, it doesn't look that smooth to me anymore or anything like that. But then he hits a bunch of shots today too. And it's size. They get Hunter back.
So Hunter's the X factor for them, because there's been flashes, but I think you and I both feel like potentially he's the second best guy in that team. If he can keep making baby steps as we get going through the playoffs, I just like their team. I like watching them. They can all shoot.
You like the villain part of this too, huh?
I do. I do. I like that Trey kind of owns it. Like, he's got a little sass to him.
Do you like Trey Young now?
No. No, I actually really do enjoy. I've really enjoyed watching him the last couple months. This isn't just the playoffs. Like, he's starting to remind me of Nash. I think there's some Nash 2.0 stuff going on. I don't think he's as great of a passer as Nash was, but the stuff he's doing, it's just he is so easily getting where he wants to go on the court. It's been really cool to watch.
Trey has the shot selection we wish Nash had.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like Nash with like a chip implanted in his head to be slightly more selfish. What do you do if you're the Knicks? Let's say they lose game five and you have this Randall situation where you just say, cool, we're running it back for you for 20.75 next year. No extension. Let's play it by ear. Let's see how you do. Or you get roped into, you're paying him $35 million a year. You just watched him get solved really easily by Atlanta, where they were just like, oh, you like to do all this stuff? We're going to take all of it away. And all of the shots you take are off balance. They seem bad. It's not just that he hasn't shot the ball well. He even the shots he's taking, he's not in balance. There's a hand in his face. I'd be really concerned to pay him $140 for 4 years is my point. I know that's an overreaction. I'm just saying, like, as the Celtics are proving with Kemba Walker, like if you miss on one of these contracts, it's a catastrophe.
Unless that surprising player, who I don't know who it is, demands to be traded there, you probably re-sign Randall. You probably don't love the number, but at least you have the asset because you have all this cap space and there's a lot of cap space out there. So you're going to be paying more than whatever projections are for these players.
But what's the number? Tell me the number. Is it 120 for 4 years?
I got to know. I don't know off the top of my head what he's eligible for off of this one. Cause his thing is different because he's been on multiple teams here.
But couldn't they decline the 20.75 and then just give him a new contract basically? Cause they're way under the cap.
Yeah. But wouldn't you rather him? What is it?
He's 20.75 next year.
I have him as partially guaranteed.
They can pay him off for a couple million.
Right.
Or they can sign him up for the
I would love him back at 1 year for that number, but that's probably not what he's going to want. So,
it's so weird. I voted for him, I think, fifth for MVP. And he's been horrible.
He was
historically horrible in the first couple games.
Don't let four games. You know what, though? Here's the deal. Like, is he perfect? No. Is he exposed a little bit? Sure. But think about where you were at as a Knicks fan. Think of where you were as an organization 6-7 months ago. You are actually respectable now.
But this is the whole point. This is the Knicks issue for 50 years is overpaying these alleged superstar forwards that ever win playoffs with.
We know that. He had a great season. He's not a superstar. Okay, fine. You don't want him back.
Spencer Haywood, Bob McAdoo, and Guinness and everybody else.
How are you getting the 90% of the floor? Like, how are you getting to the salary cap floor number that you have to get to if you let him go? Like, you're probably just going to sign him just to go like, hey, maybe we can trade him if we, you know, have a 3-year deal.
I would have to keep it between 27 and 30. If I'm going in the 30s, I'm just not doing it. I'm not paying him $35 million a year when it's not like the Hawks are the 89 Pistons. They've completely shut him down. That's a huge concern. It really is. I would be really nervous about it.
Right. But he is better than having nothing unless you know what those options are that maybe none of us know what they are right now. The next guy that's mad and wants to be traded there or something like that. But the fact that they're even a respectable franchise for the first time in, what, 20 years?
But here's the thing. You can have him next year at $20.75 million. You just have to say, we're running this back. Let's see how it looks. We'll get you some help. We have this really cool salary cap opportunity because your salary is low and we'll take care of you in a year. I don't know if his agents will go for that.
Yeah, I wouldn't go for that. Take care of me in a year.
What about Rose? Rose turns 33 next season. He made like 7.5. And to me, he's perfect as your 25 minutes a game off the bench guy. If he's starting to think, hey, I should get 40 for two or whatever, then that can stay too.
Like, yeah, no. I would say find out what the offers are. Come back to us.
Toppin? Yeah, are you feeling a little Toppin momentum? Because I'm feeling it a little bit. None at all?
No. Did you forget Kevin Knox was on the team?
I did. That's a tough one. The Knox Nitlinka back to back is rough. Not great. Too much Spike Lee or not enough Spike Lee for you with the crowd shots?
You know what? It felt good. It was a return to normalcy. I'm not gonna. I could tell you too much Snoop Dogg right now. I got it.
too much. There's been like three or four commercials we've seen way too many times. If you're like us and you're watching every game.
Yeah. Like, it's not Snoop Dogg's fault. It's not his fault. I'm just saying, like, I'm seeing him because this goes back to like last year's playoffs. We're like, oh, we're running this back. All right.
What's the one where it's like a fast food and the guy's like, oh, tasty. It's like Carl's Jr. One of those.
Yeah.
They're showing a cheeseburger and the guy's like kind of doing sex talk with the burger. I don't know what's going on with that one. Then there's the one that where they took Madness's Our House and they like sped it up and made it super weird. It was like Our House in the middle. It's like the Dennis Haysbert one. They had to have that one. That,
I got one. I got one for you. Over again. Apple that usually crushes it. Would you say branding wise, Apple does as well as anybody, you know, over the last few years?
Yes.
By the way, when I said the Knicks first time they're respectable in 20 years, that's excessive. I'd say that Mello
not
run.
2013.
Yeah. Right, right. When Mello and the Pacers series, that was a respectable crew there. So I just wanted to clean that up. Would the Willy Wonka theme song make you buy a phone?
No.
I felt like that was a miss with Apple. I go, are people going, hey, Wonka, purple, phone, in. Let's get in line. Let's camp out for this. But I'm probably not the demo. I'm probably not the target on that one.
Would a heavy breather make you want to buy a fast food? Oh, bacon cheeseburger. It's like they had hired Joe House to just, it's like what it's like to be in the car with House when he hasn't eaten in 7 hours. Like, oh, Arby's. Like, just, it's so weird. I don't understand. How are we not better at making commercials?
Well, how hard is it? I see. The thing is I think they're like, you know how radio stuff, you would go, why is it this? Like in the script. And then you'd realize that part of the radio stuff is to be annoying, to have some saying or some thing.
Right. Because you're
trying
to get somebody's attention.
Right. Like, I'll never forget. Like these timeshare ones, apparently having a timeshare is a death sentence. Have you heard this guy? Like the guy's voice, every time I hear it on any broadcast, I'll be like, I'll double check my pockets. Like, do I have a timeshare? Oh, phew, I'm good. I don't have one. They start throwing these timeshare stats at you and I get scared to death. I don't even have one, but it's just the ad works. It's in my head. Who did your notes? I just saw that page come up. Do you have an artist's? What
it's
is
how
that?
I do my notes. It's like, wow. I buy these artist sketchbooks because I like writing them because I can,
fit
a lot on a page and then I can like really think it out. I've been writing out all my notes. It really helps versus using the iPad. Get you off the iPad. So the Clips are beating the Mavs. It's not a blowout, but it looks like they're in hand. We're going to leave part one here. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to come on we're going to tape right after Clips Mavs and do the West, which became very intriguing with the Anthony Davis thing. So we'll save that for part two. This was the end of part one. Russillo, I'll see you in a couple of hours.
Sounds good.
All right, that's it for part one of the special two-parter with me and Russillo. Wait for after Mavs Clips about, I would say, an hour and a half or so after that game. We'll be putting up part two and we'll be breaking down that game as well as the West. Stay tuned for that. See you then.